Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at DecodingTV.com. If you want to get ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus episodes for the Decoding TV podcast and a Cast of Kings podcast, sign up at DecodingTV.com. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com who makes this show possible.
Elendil, an uncommon name from our western shores, is it not?
It originates there.
Pray tell, what does it mean?
One who loves the stars.
That is not its only translation, is it?
In the ancient tongue of the Eldar, it can also mean elf friend.
Then are you an elf friend?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen.
And I'm Don Marshall.
Welcome to this episode of the podcast where we are going to be recapping The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, Season 1, Episode 3, Adar. Adar is the name of the episode. We're going to spoil everything through this episode of the show. And I just want to set the expectations up top that this is a Rings of Power recap show from the show watcher's perspective. And so we're going to be talking about this primarily as a TV show, how well it functions as a TV show, but we're going to get a bunch of really useful information from Don Marshall about the show. But like, if you're looking for a podcast that's like going to be talking about it from the book reader's perspective and is going to be spoiling everything that happens, this is not that show. There are shows out there that do that, and I'd also recommend Don Marshall's other work online.
Thank you so much.
Material. So, but I wanted to let people know kind of like what they're signing up for, because I think there was a little bit of confusion of like, hey, if I already know all the stuff, like, why aren't you talking about it on the podcast? Well, we're approaching Rings of Power primarily from a show watcher's perspective. Before we get to this week's episode, Don Marshall, there's a couple of corrections, potential mm-hmm. corrections mm-hmm. we want to make. And one of the things that you can do when you sign up at decodingtv.com is you can comment on the episodes. And we got some really awesome comments for our last recap episode discussing Season 1 episodes 1 and 2. Someone named Baron TW writes in about two topics that I want to bring up on today's episode. The first is Elrond's age. So in the podcast, Don Marshall, you said Elrond is close to 3,000 or 4,000 years old at this point. But according to Baron TW, Baron TW writes, quote, Elrond was born at the end of the First Age and was only 63 years old at the start of the Second Age. We don't know what year the show is set in, but the show talks about how it's been centuries since Morgoth's defeat. Considering what Celebrimbor is doing, it feels closer to 12 or 1300 years into the Second Age. So he could be as young as 400 years in the show, although more likely he's 1300. But either way, probably not 3,000 or 4,000 years old, which is what you said last week. So what do you think of Baron TW's age recounting, Don?
Baron TW, you are almost certainly right, and my respect. So here's sort of where I was coming from in that perspective. They are doing a time compression for this TV show, so the 3,000 plus years that is happening in the Second Age is going to be happening. A lot of the major events are going to be squished together, and I think I just sort of assumed that they were going to lump that all towards the end of the Second Age. But yeah, I did go back and check, and it is centuries. So you are 100% right, and I'm very interested to see if we'll ever get any sort of indication of the time or the year that it happens. I don't think we will, but you are absolutely correct. And it is sometimes nice to be humbled and put in my place when I get something incorrect.
Yeah, to be fair, you weren't coming out of you weren't just pulling that number out of your ass, Don.
Oh,
right?
You had a good reason
for assuming it might be 3,000 or 4,000 years because you thought end of Second Age. But the show is making it pretty unclear like what time frame it's taking in.
It's ambiguous, but I kind of like it that way.
Baron T.W. also brings up a concern that I also was thinking about this past week, reflecting on the first two episodes of the show. And this is about the depiction of Galadriel. We touched upon this a little bit in last week's episode, but I want to get into it a little bit more. So Baron T.W. writes, quote, "Galadriel is 2,000 years older than Elrond, and an unknown amount older than Gil-galad, who is her great-nephew. The interaction between her and Gil-galad was fine fantasy, for sure, but it wasn't in line with the character created by Tolkien. This is all established in the content the series has the rights to. It is only done this way to have her go to sea, wash up on shore, meet the people that she needs to meet for the plot. In the book, she's been married for 1,000 years at this point, but that doesn't play for romance in the show. Which I get, but the show as a whole is constantly infantilizing her and removing her agency to have her as a token youngish warrior leading a band of 6 or 7 elves being bossed around. The character has this fiery nature to do the mission to the north, to stand up to others, to do what she wants, to even make mistakes and piss people off for the drama. This approach in the show is just a lazy option to just change her. As Dave said, a good prequel should improve the original, not break it. This isn't in line with the established character. Anyway, and I'll stop there. He goes on for a little bit longer, but you know, and what I've seen is that Galadriel in the books is older than all the other characters you see in the show: Elrond, Gil-galad, Celebrimbor. But in the show, like, all those people seem way older than her, right? Also, Galadriel in the books is super powerful, like almost godlike powerful. So you wouldn't even question why she could swim for like many miles off the boat, right? They clearly changed that for the show.
Yeah.
And I think that probably the journey they chose for the character in the show is more interesting. Like, you're meeting a character who is not as powerful, who's going to come into her home, become more powerful over time. That's more interesting than you're meeting a character and she's already a complete badass and like, so
yeah.
But yeah. But what do you think, Don, of these issues?
So I know that is a huge point of contention for some people in the Tolkien community, that they are sort of changing Galadriel's storyline. For me personally, Dave, I took your advice in the No Thoughts, Just Vibes for the intro, and I'm going to relate that No Thoughts, Just Vibes for the introduction and relate it to Galadriel. Galadriel in Tolkien's established books and lore and the canon that he wrote doesn't really do much, right? She is very old and she is very powerful, but she's hanging around in forests, giving advice to people, and then her and Celeborn go hang out in Lothlorien after it's all over, and that's where we see them in the Fellowship of the Ring movie. But I think from like I always try and also look at it not just from a canon perspective, but like a marketing perspective. So when you've got this idea of a Lord of the Rings prequel, you know, the hobbits aren't born yet, Aragorn's not born yet, Gandalf may or may not be around. I don't really know what the Stranger is a whole nother can of worms that we'll open up later. But for Galadriel, I think it's a little bit more interesting from a narrative perspective for a 50-hour TV show to have this character be sort of like a younger hothead who will gradually transition to this elven queen badass that we see in Fellowship of the Ring. And I think that's a more interesting story for me personally. I get that that's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but it is sort of the way the showrunners are going. And, you know, unless they pull something ridiculous like Galadriel goes to space and talks to God, which I don't think they'll do at all, then yeah, I'm fine with them finally giving her something to do.
So I think you're agreeing that in the context of the book, she is super powerful, but 100%. They've clearly depowered her for the show, right? And
yes,
and yeah. I think, you know, the trade-off, you know, you put it as marketing. I agree with you. It is a marketing consideration, but it's also like a storytelling consideration. Like,
oh yeah,
what's the more interesting story to tell? And then like related to that is like, okay, now that you've told the more interesting story, like what's the more interesting story you can tell that you can get people interested in? And certainly the story of how Galadriel became super powerful Cate Blanchett in Lord of the Rings trilogy is like potentially like a really interesting one. Mm-hmm. I do want to call out that there is a trade-off, right? That the trade-off is that you have basically depowered this super powerful female character, and that in some ways you're depriving the audience of the opportunity to see Galadriel as she might have been depicted in the books, which is like all these other dudes theoretically should respect her as being older and more powerful than them. But instead, it's quite the opposite dynamic in the show, right?
Yeah.
So that is a trade-off. I agree with you. The story is, to me, a more interesting one of like Galadriel's growth over time. Like, I agree that that does sound like something, a show I'd want to watch more.
Yeah.
Just from a character journey perspective. Because if Galadriel's already powerful, then it's like, where does she have to go from there? Like, what is the growth thing?
Right? She doesn't. And this is, you know, this is what Tolkien was setting out to do. I don't think there's necessarily a main character in the Second Age, which is why they sort of went with this idea of the ensemble cast. I think if they were going to do anything and like go back to the beginning, maybe Elrond becomes like the main character and we see his journey. But I think just in the interest of like a good story and from a marketing perspective, let's get the people that saw the movies. It's like, ooh, young Galadriel, young Elrond. I want to watch that.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, thank you so much for your feedback at decodingtv.com. And you can also email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Don is not above being challenged for his views on characters' ages.
I welcome it. I relish the challenge, please. Yes.
Indeed. All right, Don, let's talk about season one, episode three.
Oof.
So start with overall thoughts. What did you think of this episode of the show?
I pressed play on this episode and I had a moment of my stomach dropping because I've already seen the first two episodes. I've watched them multiple times. I loved the response. And then I realized, oh, shoot, it keeps going. And I was just this moment of panic.
Because you went to the premiere, you probably watched the first two episodes like three or four times, right? You did
five.
watch parties.
Yeah.
Right, watch parties and you're like, you know, like for weeks, that has been the show for you.
Yes. Yes.
And then there's more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I watched the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, and it was 2.5 hours and then it was done.
Yeah.
And now I get to come back to Middle Earth every week and there's this little bit of apprehension. I'm like, oh, there's more?
Don't mess it up.
And I'm happy to say that I do not think they messed this one up either. I think we start off Galadriel's storyline continues to be very strong, sort of just waking up on this boat. You know, being fed by Halbrand, meeting Elendil, who they don't name Elendil until a little bit later on in the episode. So he's just like this looming captain. But really, overall, loved the episode.
I thought it was a decent episode. Here are some things I liked, some things that I'm like, kind of looking askance at, right? I thought the Arendir stuff was awesome. I mean,
that plot doesn't
move very much in this, like not that much happens to advance the plot, but it's just like on a pure filmmaking perspective, I thought it was really well done. So
yeah.
I love the Arendir stuff just like executionally. The Harfoot stuff I'm kind of like is okay. Like I'm kind of curious where it's going. There's some elements to it that some really dark elements to the Harfoot plot that we'll talk about. And then the Galadriel stuff, I'm a little bit worried about, Don. I think because a lot of stuff is happening in the Galadriel stuff, and some of it doesn't feel super motivated. Like some of it feels like, oh, stuff's just happening out of nowhere, and we're advancing the plot along, and we're relying on a lot of lore that you may be familiar with, but that I don't know that, like from a show archer's perspective, is that clear?
Yeah.
So,
and to me, it is a little bit, you know, it is sort of clear because I kind of have a better understanding of where they're going. So I can sort of, I think it's seeing the trees through the forest or the opposite, whatever the case may be.
Forest for the trees. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I do agree. We'll get to the Harfoot stuff in a minute because I have a couple of thoughts about that. There was some stuff there, but do we want to start with Galadriel?
Yeah. Let's start with Galadriel. I mean, the one thing I'll say is like, I'm curious about like, it really does seem to be setting up a parallel, you know, where have we heard this before? Elven woman falling in love with human man who, by the way, just needs to recognize the true king he has within, you know, like, you know, and maybe Tolkien's work is cyclical in that way, but like, it does feel like it's really trying to evoke the feelings of, you know, the original trilogy of films.
May I share a brief possible spoiler theory that I have? I know we like to warn people.
Yeah. So you're going to use your knowledge of the book. You don't know the information of where the story is going.
I have no basis for this whatsoever. Okay. Just sort of what I know. Right. So skip ahead 30 seconds to a minute if you don't want my theory. I think that the Galadriel storyline is going to be a bit of a bait and switch. And here's why. I think if they were going to reveal that Halbrand is this king of the Southlands that they introduced, then it should have been at the end of season one, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a kind of cool plot twist that we can see, like, oh, we're finally going to get to see why the Southlanders are the way they are. But I have a sneaking suspicion that we are going to see Halbrand in a very different light, either in the end of season one or at the beginning of season two, or maybe even later. I don't trust him. And the reason I don't trust him is, and we're kind of skipping ahead in the plot line a little bit, but there was this one scene where he fought off a couple of men. And the ferocity that he fought them with leads me to believe that there is like a very deep anger that dwells within him that to me seemed a little superhuman. So I'll leave it there. You know, again, I have no basis for this other than my own theories, but
here is my reaction. Cause you wrote a little bit about this in the show notes too. Mm-hmm. But here's my reaction, Don. Oh, my sweet summer child. Don Marshall. because Don, your basically reaction was, oh, the way they introduced him as the hidden king, it's too sudden. It's too sudden for it to actually make sense. And I'll just say, to be as charitable as possible, Occam's razor style, maybe they just rushed the introduction of him as the Southland king, and they're trying to like evoke the feelings of the original trilogy, and it, as a result, feels like a little bit kind of, rather than they're forging bold new territory, they're kind of playing the hits of the past.
Okay. Okay.
But we'll see. Well, this is what's fun, Don. At the end of the season, one of us is probably going to be proven right or wrong. All right. So we'll talk about Galadriel's storyline first because it makes up the bulk of the episode. At the end of the last episode, Galadriel and Halbrand had been on a raft on their own, and somebody found them on their own ship, and I was like, who is that? And you were like, I know who it is. And I assume it was who you thought it was.
It was.
So Elendil, mm-hmm, is the person commanding the ship, Isildur's father. Isildur, yes. For those who don't recall, I think he is first introduced in the films in the prologue of the first movie.
Yes. Right?
Where he is the guy that's supposed to cast the ring into Mount Doom, and then Elrond is with him, and then Isildur's like, you know what? I'm going to hang on to this thing. And he's like, no. And then Elrond's like very disappointed in him. Am I getting this right?
Yes. I will also just very briefly mention, I've gotten thousands of times I have gotten this question. Why didn't Elrond just throw Isildur into the lava, to the point where the catchphrase "Yeet Isildur" became sort of a meme within my TikTok community. There's a reason he doesn't, but well, that is spoiler territory for show watchers, so we will get into that a little later.
Interesting, yeah. And I should point out, he's also the guy that cuts the ring off Sauron's finger in the first.
In the first movie,
he cuts the ring off, and then he's about to cast it, and then he doesn't cast it. Yeah, so that's Isildur. We meet his father. He's the one that's running the ship that mm-hmm. picks up Galadriel. Right. Mm-hmm. They go to Numenor, the westernmost lands, and it's like an island on its own.
It's Tolkien's version of Atlantis, basically.
Interesting. And so we see Numenor. Was this depicted in the trilogy of films? I don't think so, right? Was it?
No, there may be. I'm trying to think. There was one reference to it in the extended edition of The Two Towers, where Eowyn says, "You are one of the Dúnedain, gifted with long life." The Dúnedain, Aragorn, and the rest of the humans that are the Rangers of the North, are the descendants of these Numenoreans.
Gotcha. But yeah, we don't see the actual physical location.
No.
Well, good pull there, Don Marshall. That's impressive.
Thanks,
man.
I didn't get this nickname for nothing.
So they go to Numenor. Sorry, I can't roll my R's as good as Morfydd Clark does in the show, but
It's Morvith.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's a really amazing sort of CG creation of this huge, like, there's so much detail in these locations. It's amazing.
They pulled out to that wide shot where you see just, it was like watching Minas Tirith times 1,000. It was just beautiful.
And you got to see it in multiple times of day too, which is really impressive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, love just kind of the design, continue to love the design and beauty of this world.
Yeah. And I will say just another, if I may just chime in, the set that they built for the port where Galadriel and Halbrand step out onto the ship, that is real. Almost all of that is entirely real. They literally built that set. We heard about it at the San Diego Comic-Con Hall H panel this year. And it was just seeing it on screen for the first time, knowing that it was all, you know, practical is just astounding.
I think overall the show is doing a really good job of blending the practical and the CG.
Agreed. You know? Agreed.
Which not many shows do.
No, there was one moment this episode, but we'll get into that a little later. I didn't think it quite worked for me, but that's later on.
We learn that Numenor is a land of humans, and it basically, like, there were some humans that swore oath to Morgoth, who's the bad guy, and the elves fought against Morgoth. And there's some humans who swore loyalty to elves, and Numenor was kind of gifted to the men from elves as a result of their loyalty. Is that roughly correct?
Pretty close. there's so many more really intricate, unnecessary details I could add, but for the sake of not being here for 4 hours.
Sure, and there is some contention, as evidence in the episode, about, like, oh, how much of a gift really was it? Because, like, men earned this, the men earned this island by fighting and dying for it, right? And so, we meet the queen regent.
Yes.
And this guy named Farazon. What is Farazon's relationship to the queen regent, by the way?
So I can only answer this from a book perspective. I don't believe we've gotten their relation yet, given in the show, but they are cousins. So Muriel's, as we learn in the episode, Muriel's father was the king. He was pretty much exiled. And so she becomes queen regent. And Farazon is, I think at this point in the show, at least, an advisor. But they are related in the books.
They bring these folks in because they want to know what's going on. What's going on with Galadriel and this stowaway Halbrand? Like, what is happening with these people? Galadriel identifies herself as Galadriel of the Noldor, daughter of the Golden House of Finferin, or Finarfin, commander of the northern armies of High King Gil-galad, right? Which is, you know, very reminiscent also of, like, how people in Game of Thrones introduce themselves.
You know,
King Joffrey of the Andals.
Joffrey of House Baratheon, first of my name and all that.
Right. Exactly, yeah. You gotta have a good sort of series of suffixes or, you know, titles at the end of your name whenever you introduce yourself in court. I think you had a detail you wanted to point out about this introduction,
right? Yes, I do. So she introduces herself, Galadriel introduces herself as Galadriel of the Noldor and the daughter of the Golden House of Finarfin. And Finarfin is Galadriel's father. And he was one of the elves that stayed in the Undying Lands, which is that paradise land that we see in episode one. He did not go to war. He was one of the elves that got cold feet and turned back for a number of different reasons, but he is not in Middle Earth at all. So Galadriel is sort of on her own at this point.
There is a lot of tension that's going on in this scene because I guess the idea is that elves are not really welcome in Numenor, or if they are welcome, they're not allowed to move freely.
I think they did a really good job sort of explaining the turmoil that is happening in Numenor that will eventually down the road, you know, as a book reader, there's issues that will arise. Obviously I won't spoil it here, but, the idea that the sort of elves are not welcome, I think they set that up, really well, because there is, it's kind of like what we see between the elves and the dwarves in the Fellowship of the Ring with the Legolas-Gimli relationship. There's sort of this, like, antagonistic relationship at the beginning.
Yeah, and we already get a sense of the tension between elves and humans from the first two episodes as well, right? Like, the humans and elves have not had a good relationship in this era of Middle-earth. And so Halbrand comes in, he's like, hey, I have an idea. Give us a few days and think about Galadriel's request, because she wants to get out of here. She wants to get out of, she's going to fight the evil, right? Like, that's what mm-hmm. she wants to do. And they're like, well, we can't just let you go do that. And certainly we can't let you like take any of our resources to do that. So Halbrand's like, look, let's just give us a few days to think about it. Of course, Numenor, well known for a lot of things, awesome outfits, yeah. beautiful waterfalls and statues, not great security from what I can tell.
Nope, she escapes immediately.
Escapes almost immediately.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Like, yeah. Good for her.
So she's about to escape. She meets Elendil, and then they decide to go to the Hall of Lore together. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, kind of what I was talking about earlier of like, okay, why is Elendil there? Why is he helping her? Maybe that's going to become clear later. Why do they want to go to the Hall of Lore exactly? I felt like it wasn't super well explained, but you tell me, Don, what was this all clear to you, like why this was all happening in the sequence?
Yeah, so this is the Hall of Lore, sort of a setup for a reveal that we'll get to in a moment. I do think they probably could have explained it a little better, but the relationship between Elendil and Galadriel was, I quite liked it. She is, you know, a hothead, threatens to stab him, he threatens to turn her in, so there's kind of like a, hey, you work with me, I'll work with you. But it definitely felt as though the Hall of Lore was a setup for what we later find out is the mark of Sauron.
Right. Like they need to get to the Hall of Lore in order to find out this very important fact, basically, that's going to motivate a lot of the actions of the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Why she wanted to go to the Hall of Lore, I guess, because they were in the area.
It might help her find it. It's like, I think what Elendil might have been trying to do here is like, look, just stay. Don't try and escape immediately. Let me at least show you around and maybe we can help you. But
come see what amazing wonders Numenor holds for you. Maybe then you won't want to leave immediately.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's like when you're visiting your hometown or when someone's visiting your hometown with you and you need to like, you're the one putting in all the work to like make sure they don't get bored. You know, look, we have an ice cream shop. We have a Friendly's, you know, like.
Oh, Friendly's. Anyway. I haven't thought about Friendly's in years. Oh, my
Nor
God.
Nor I, sir. Nor I. Okay. We've got a Friendly's. We've got a postcard shop. You know, like we've got a gift shop downtown.
Right.
Okay. So they go to the Hall of Lore.
Real quick, because we do get a little bit of things before the Hall of Lore. We finally see Galadriel smile for the first time when she is riding the horse.
They're using what appears to be like a phantom camera, which can shoot at like 1,000 frames per second, basically, mm-hmm. and doing like mm-hmm. ultra slow motion. It's extremely beautiful. It's indulgent.
Oh,
I didn't mind, so I didn't mind it at all.
I will say I did. When I first saw it, I was like, why is Morvith making a silly face? Oh, she's smiling. Oh, this is the first time we've seen that. Oh, this is just one of those scenes. Okay, I'll allow it.
I mean, I think that she got like really excited when she's like, oh, we can ride there, you know? And I think the idea is that like we get a sense that she really likes riding because we haven't seen her ride horses in the show yet, I don't think.
No.
Yeah. So she really likes riding horses. She has the opportunity to do that and enjoys it. And it's nice. One of the things that people say a lot about the difference between Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings is like Game of Thrones, like every episode you're watching someone get like brutally tortured to death in some capacity. And Lord of the Rings is very much more like a hangout show. You know, we're just hanging out with these people. They're going on little adventures and stuff like that.
Yeah, no thoughts, just vibes.
Yeah. There's some stress, you know, there's some evil and things, orcs that need to be killed and so on, mm-hmm. but like, it's not nearly as vicious and brutal as Game of Thrones, and it's scenes like this that kind of help accentuate that difference, where she's just like, I'm just having fun on my horse, you know, just enjoying riding horse across this beautiful vista. And it's nice that we kind of get that, you know, we get all of those sides of fantasy, right?
Yeah.
With both these shows on the air right now. So,
yeah.
All right. So they go to the Hall of Lore, which is, I think it's actually a hilarious name for a place. It's like, this is, if someone was really interested in lore, like Don Marshall, and he built a testament to lore, it would probably look something like this. It would probably be like, you'd probably hold little scrolls, like little wine bottles, right?
Oh,
like
in these that little... sounds so cool. Yeah. If I had the money, I would absolutely do that, but I'll settle for a TikTok channel.
Yes, indeed. So it's revealed that Elrond's brother built the hall. Elrond's dad saved the world. Well, actually, this is a detail you wanted to provide. This is
a nice little nod to folks that know the Silmarillion. So Elrond's dad in the end of the First Age was a huge part of winning the war that they talk about in the Rings of Power prologue. They don't mention him. I think it's a rights thing, but it's really not all that important. But the little nice detail is Elrond and Elros were given the choice to be among mortals or immortals. So Elrond chose to be an elf, and his brother Elros chose to be human as sort of like a gift from the Valar, the lesser gods that Galadriel mentions in the episode. And this is kind of why you see a sadness in Elrond's eyes a little bit. I know he's not in this episode, but Elrond has lost quite a bit. And when his brother passed, it's not written about in a lot of detail. But it is, you know, it's a sad time for Elrond because he realizes he's, you know, never going to see him again. But Elros did some amazing things as the first king of Numenor. So,
gotcha. So then the lore master comes in and there's like, hey, we found this piece of information. Like, I think it was like a spy or something found this piece of information.
Someone got captured and then he was rescued and he remembers this symbol. Yeah.
So this is kind of like the complaint I was making earlier. This podcast is like, okay, so it's a critical piece of information, right? Which is like, oh, hey, the symbol that Sauron is making, that's no sigil. That's no moon.
It's a space station.
That's not a sigil. It's a map, you know? And that's a kind of cool reveal of like, she sees the map, but it's like, okay, so this spy that I don't think we've ever met happened to have this piece of information at the exact time that they were in the Hall of Lore. Like, what if she decided not to go to the Hall of Lore? Would she have ever found, you know, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But you know what? She needed to get this information.
Right.
Right. And the information is Sauron's going to build a new society of evil people, right?
Yep.
As far as I can tell.
Yep.
And he's going to start with the Southlands, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what that sigil is, or the symbol is.
The sigil is sideways. We've been looking at it from the wrong perspective each time, which is, you know, oddly kind of like the little metaphor of the whole show. It's like, Galadriel, if you just shift your perspective a little bit, in this case, 90 degrees, it's a map.
Yeah. Why do you think Sauron would carve that map onto Galadriel's brother's body, though, Don? What do you think about that?
David, that is an obscure fact I do not have the answer to. So I don't know.
The dude is a hidden cartographer, is really. He's just, once he starts thinking about maps, he's just carving them everywhere onto people's bodies, I mean, he's basically leaving clues.
Right? Yeah. Almost.
I go back to my first part about him being my first statement about him being a serial killer. Like, he's like, I left you all the clues, Mr. Policeman, you know,
He's like taunting them. And look, does it make sense to me right now in episode 3? Not so much, but you know, maybe they'll find a way to sort of, get that sorted. I'm going to wait until, I don't want to say season 1 is over because this definitely feels like a slow burn show. So like maybe season 2 or 3, that will be explained, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, all right. Also related to this storyline is Halbrand, who tries to become a blacksmith, and they say you can't become you can't smelt metal unless you have this guild badge. So he's like, okay, I'm going to try to get this guild badge. So he meets some people, and they're kind of, I guess, there's some tension with the people of Numenor and their refugee policy, or their prisoner policy. Right? They're taking in these people, and they're like, hey, why are you taking all of our resources, but you're not giving anything back to society? And he's like, drinks for everyone, and I'm going to steal your badge as well.
Yeah.
So then there's this really intense scene that you alluded to earlier where they try to get the badge back, and then he beats the shit out of all of them.
Yeah. That was, I don't know if you've seen The Witcher. The first episode of the season 1 of The Witcher has this incredibly brutal scene that really reminded me of this and kind of makes me think that Halbrand may be way more ferocious than is led on, and we kind of see it in this scene. He destroys these dudes with a ferocity, and that caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, it's probably the most violent scene that's been in the show so far. I mean, people have died in the show and, you know, already, but it's like, just in terms of sheer human on human violence, definitely like probably the most intense scene. So
yeah.
Then he is put in jail Galadriel comes back from the Hall of Lore and is like, hey, come with me to redeem both of our bloodlines, mm-hmm. is what she says. And the idea is that, like, Hallbrand is the king of the Southlands, is what comes out of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're skeptical. To me, this reads like rush storytelling and less sort of putting in... this reads to me like rush storytelling and not a head fake for something else that's coming later. That's my opinion.
Okay, fair. I'm in the head fake camp, but we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, man. You know, we'll see what... So I guess the idea, if we're taking them at their word, he is king of the Southlands, and... But he has kind of... his parental line swore an oath to Morgoth, the evil guy, right? So he's king of the Southlands, and their people have no king anymore, basically, because he has not chosen to ascend to his rightful place because he has great shame about the fact that his family is fighting on the wrong side.
May or may not harken back to Aragorn's bloodline that we see in the trilogy.
It may or may not at all.
Yeah.
Probably does. The thing is, though, Don, okay, let's assume that this is, in fact, like, that everything, we can take everything at face value, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't the idea behind Return of the King is that there was no king until Aragorn came back, right?
So,
or were there other kings in between this time and then? Right?
So this, I think, might be getting lost on folks that maybe don't know a lot of the details. We don't have a lot of information about the Southlands. And so what the showrunners, I think, did was they created these characters like Bronwyn and Theo to be sort of the conduits for, hey, let's explore these people in the South. Because even though Tolkien doesn't have a lot of detail about them, it's still a part of the world that plays a part both in the second, you know, and the third age. So this is not, as far as I am aware, at least, Halbrand and the Southland kingdoms don't have much to do with Aragorn's bloodline or descendants. Mm-hmm.
We can consider it a separate country, basically.
I think so.
Yeah. So the idea is that we can be invested in this as separate from the events of, you know, the original trilogy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Maybe he is the real king and he becomes king of the Southlands, and Aragorn doesn't care about any of that. Right? is the idea probably mm-hmm. right? So. All right. A couple of other things happen in and around Numenor. We meet Isildur, who is Elendil's son, right?
Yes, Matt, played by Maxim Baldry.
He is trying out to be a sea guard. What is that, Don Marshall? Do you know what
Sea Guard is? They made it up for the show. But
wow.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think it's a really cool idea. The Numenoreans are mariners, right? They live on an island, their trade, their commerce. It's all based on the sea. And I think to give Isildur this kind of like motivation to like be part of the guard is cool, but then we learn later in another scene he might not actually want to do that.
Right. I mean, a lot of like family drama vibes in this episode of mm-hmm. hey, I want to take a gap year before I head off to college, or you know, I want to go abroad in France before I go back to the University of Pittsburgh or whatever, you know, like it's like it's basically kind of what it is. And and I thought it was fine as family drama. You know, like here's the thing about the show, Don, is I am curious at what speed the show is going to continue to introduce new characters. Because mm-hmm. we are three episodes in, and it is still introducing new characters, and yeah. there's only five episodes left. And, like, at some point, you got to start wrapping up these characters' storylines for the season. So I'm hoping this is all the characters we're going to get for this season.
As far as I'm aware, I think this is it. I will maybe say... I am of the opinion that maybe people should temper their expectations about a season having a character arc mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. we may see a one season or potentially two season or three season character arc for these characters.
I mean, I think that's fair, Don, but also I think TV shows should have season long arcs, you know?
I happen to agree with you.
Call me old fashioned, Don Marshall, but I think that if you're putting a season of TV out, that it should have a beginning, middle, and end, and that should be true for Not necessarily all, but most of the characters, right? So anyway, so we also meet Isildur's sister, Eärion.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of have, there's family tension with like Isildur, his sister, their dad, and whether or not he goes to become a sea guard person, whether or not she goes to become part of the guild. I think
it's a builder's guild. Yeah. I'd have to go back and double check, but yeah, I think they might be a bit of the family drama going on there, and which is to me fine because we are in a 50-hour TV show, not a 2.5-hour movie. So like you need some lines of dialogue to kind of explain the journey these characters are going to go on.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I'm curious where these are going, but right now at this moment in the show, I'm not too invested in like whether Isildur goes to become a sea guard or whether his sister becomes in the ability. Like, I don't know enough about what the stakes are to have an opinion, you know?
Okay.
But as a starting point, I think it's fine. Like, the actors are doing a great job. So,
yep.
Any other details about the Isildur family relationship that you want to mention?
So a couple of fun things. Elendil's, as we learn in the episode, his name means elf friend. I thought that was a nice little scene. That was also a bit of a lore drop between Elendil and Muriel. I don't know if this is true or not, but there is a not 0% chance that Muriel may have just handed Narsil, the sword that Elendil uses, that we see in the trilogy, just then. I don't know whether or not that's true, but I think it might have been just like very casually dropped in there.
Gotcha. We also see, speaking of swords and daggers, we also see, I think, Halbrand steals back Galadriel's dagger and gives it back to her. They're really putting a lot of emphasis on the dagger this season, Don. Mm-hmm. So, but I guess it's important because she got it from her dead brother's body. So.
Yes.
Okay. So that mostly covers the Isildur and Elendil stuff. Again, it's a fine start. We'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. But I'm like a little nervous at like how many characters there. Like there's more plot lines even than beyond from the first two episodes. We'll see how it goes. There is a teaser sort of at the end with Muriel where she goes into this room and she talks to her father. She's like talking to her father, I think, at the end, right?
Mm-hmm. So she goes in, hangs a lantern, says, you know, father, the moment we feared is here.
Yeah, the moment we've the elf has arrived, as foretold in the prophecy. You know,
there's a lot of prophecy. There, I mean, the Harfoots have it in their little schedule book, and
yeah. So that's Numenor, a cool place, kind of a little mildly rocky start to some of these things, but certainly I'm not. I'm very open to seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how Halbrand, like there's clearly like sort of darker elements to him that they're introducing that I think will be interesting to explore. So before we move on to the rest of the plot lines, we'll take a brief moment and talk about where people can find more of your work on the internet, Don Marshall.
Yes, I am at Don Marshall 72, number 2 on most social media platforms. I am on TikTok, which is my main platform, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, as well as Twitch. You can just search my name. It comes up on pretty much every search engine. I am also on Patreon, patreon.com/DonMarshall72. If you feel so inclined, there's a bunch of bonus content that I put there. I do also, and this is new, I just figured it out in between episodes, we're going to be doing watch parties for The Rings of Power every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be considered a rewatch. So I'm going to be talking over it, taking questions from chat. And if you feel so inclined, come join us over on my Twitch channel Sundays at 1 p.m.
If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, you might also enjoy the rest of the other shows that we're covering. We're covering She-Hulk and other exciting things in the future at podcast.decodingtv.com. You can also listen to my conversations about House of the Dragon over at acastofkings.com, a Decoding TV podcast. And if you want to support this show, because you like what you're hearing, you want more of it, decodingtv.com is where you can pay to become a member and get special bonuses like ad-free episodes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, Dawn, just a couple of other plot lines this episode.
Yeah, we didn't get everybody, which I think because they introduced the new people was probably a good idea.
Who didn't we see this episode, Don?
We did
Marshall?
Not see Elrond. We did not see Durin or Disa, which made me very sad. We did not see Celebrimbor. We did not see Gil-galad, which I'm hoping we see next episode very much.
Mm-hmm. And we also didn't see Bronwyn or Theo.
That's true. Oh, that's true. We didn't see them either.
No idea what happened to that evil dagger that he had. Like, I wonder if it's doing more eviling in the world. You know?
We'll probably find out next episode or so. That's maybe a character arc that will resolve this season, I think.
Wow, you're making that bold prediction now.
It's my hot take for the day.
We see Arandir in this episode, played by Ismael Cruz Cordova. Last episode, we saw he was being captured underground by an unseen monster. He was being whisked away. And this episode, again, the way this was all done was really effective. He's kind of being dragged through this weird lair.
It's like some sort of tunnel of some sort that they, because the orcs can't sort of be in the sunlight, we learn. And so they need to basically cover the entirety of it.
Is that a show invention, by the way, that they can't be in the sunlight? They're like vampire-like?
That is mentioned. I don't know a lot of the detail here, so I'm sure someone, maybe one of the comments, will be able to provide for next week. But as far as I'm aware, orcs don't usually travel in sunlight, but the Uruk-hai that we see in the trilogy can. Mm. I don't know if it's
what's the difference between orc and Uruk-hai again?
Some not so great implications about crossbreeding.
I see.
Gotcha. Orcs are corrupted elves, Sauron's master Morgoth, that we heard about in the first episode. Corrupted elves. But Tolkien changed his mind about that quite a bit in various other drafts. Uruk-hai are, they don't pop out of holes in the ground like you see in the movie in Tolkien's books. They are a crossbreed between humans and orcs.
I see. So they actually did like a good job of kind of eliminating some of the more problematic elements in the movies, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Whatever the case, however, whether it was invented for the show or inspired by the books, they burn in sunlight in the show.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's being dragged through, and you find out that the other elves have also been enslaved. Mm-hmm. Right? The other elves we saw in the first couple episodes, which is like, wow. And it's actually shocking because you're not used to seeing elves being subjugated. Like, most of the time that people have seen elves in Middle Earth, it has been them completely annihilating orcs.
Yeah.
And so it's very weird to see elves being enslaved by orcs, as you do in this episode. And I kind of appreciated the subversion of expectations. And the way this all played out, like the set looks so elaborate, like all these details.
Oh,
these...
so well done. So well done. This felt almost like a bottle episode where it only, like, obviously it was one story arc, but like I'm kind of glad that they just like kept them in this pit. It felt very like claustrophobic. The orcs prosthetics are amazing.
I think they
did a great job.
So the orcs talk about their leader, who is
Don Adar. Adar, which is the Elvish word for father. Now, I will admit my own fault here, because many months ago, when this was announced that the character Adar would be here, I thought that this might be Tom Bombadil, because his name in the books is Eärwein Ben Adar, which is Elvish for oldest and fatherless. And so I was very excited, kind of like speculating that maybe we'll see a Tom Bombadil cameo. Could not have been more wrong.
Indeed. And there's a lot of questions about whether Adar is Sauron or not. Like, they're like, it's often Sauron has uses many names, and one of them might be Adar, you know, because it's the orcs speaking in their language. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you have an opinion on.
So Sauron does have a lot of names. He is known as Myron. He is known as Sauron the Deceiver. He's got a couple of others that may potentially be spoilers, so I won't bring them up right now. But Myron was like his sort of like spirit name. I don't know if this is Sauron, though. I'll be honest. This feels like maybe a Nazgul origin story. One of the ring wraiths. But we don't get a lot of the backstory for the Nazgul. So they could be the showrunners doing that. It could be something entirely different. It could be like a corrupted human or one of his servants. It could be a corrupted elf. It could be some gross, horrible experiment gone wrong, because Sauron is eventually in The Hobbit known as the Necromancer. So maybe Sauron's brought someone back from the dead, or the possibilities really are endless here.
Gotcha.
With this character. So I'm very curious to see.
Not
if
a
they
slam
do.
Dunk that it is Sauron at the very least.
Not a slam dunk by any means. No.
Interesting. There's a couple of scenes of conflict and strife within this camp. There's a scene where one of the orcs offers one of the elves water, and then you're like, oh, is something wrong with the water? Nope. He just was using it to slit the guy's throat. The old bait and slit. It's upsetting. It's an upsetting scene. And Aaron is like, okay, because the elves, by the way, from what I understand, are conservationists. We've heard in this episode, you know, they don't want to destroy these long running trees. And I thought it was fascinating to see like the wide shots of this whole area. Like you see, there's this like massive trench basically is what it is, with like camouflage from the sun, or you know, sun camouflage is really kind of
it's like impressive. An awning over this huge tunnel that they're digging that is just
architecturally it's massive, or engineering wise it's a massive
it's huge. Which also is a nice little callback to something that you mentioned last episode, David, where we see in the title sequence the black sand slithering through the other sand almost as if it is a tunnel or a trench. And this kind of made me think of, maybe that's the visual representation. So again,
Maybe it is. Maybe the opening credits are a bit more representative than you think, Don Marshall. You
know? I perhaps was too quick to judge, David. You were quite right.
My wife agreed with your assessment, by the way. She's like, I really wish the opening credits helped us understand where we are in the show. Mm-hmm. There was a scene in this episode, I don't know if you recall, where like it goes from Numenor to the Southlands.
Yes, they use the
map to do that. And I think that's actually super helpful. Like, definitely keep doing that, show, because
100%.
I'm going to need assistance to figure out where I am. So anyway, so there's this whole conflict with the orcs, and there's actually one orc that was played by a very specific actor that you noticed, right?
Yes. So this actor is named Jed Brophy. And if you don't know who Jed Brophy is, you probably won't even recognize his face either, because he plays a number of characters in the Peter Jackson trilogy as well as The Hobbit. So he is Nori, the dwarf in The Hobbit. He also plays a Nazgul. He plays an orc. He also played the Wargrider orc that we see in the Two Towers that tells Legolas that Aragorn fell off the cliff. He's a rider of Rohan. The man is a prolific actor, stuntman, coordinator. Just I've been lucky enough to actually meet him. The nicest guy, and we'll just sit down and talk to you for 10 minutes and just, you know, shoot the breeze. And it's very cool to see that they brought him back. I thought that was really well done.
It is interesting to see the ways in which there's continuity between this show and the films. Bringing in actors like Jed Brophy is one of the ways they do that. Also, I don't know if we explicitly mentioned this on the episode last week, but Howard Shore does the theme for this show. Bear McCreary writes the music, but Howard Shore wrote the actual song that plays over the credits, which I thought was thought was a nice touch. You know, it's a beautiful theme.
So just to have him there, even just a little bit, is nice.
Yeah, but basically, I think like. they're clearly trying to play off our memory of the original trilogy of films, right? In clear ways. And I think that, you know, whether or not Hallbrand becomes part of that, it's going to be going to decide whether you or I are correct. But there's an amazing fight sequence to this episode that I really loved, with like them using the chains and then them like interlocking the chains and like use, you know, like hitting them with axes, try to get free, and Arandir and his buddy are trying to get out. And it's like, it was an awesome sequence. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. And like, I thought that was great.
And breaking down the, you know, the structure and kind of,
yeah, when he jumps off of the chain and does that huge leap. That was to me, that was the moment where like the 12-year-olds who are watching this show, my equivalent of like watching Legolas surf down the shield in the Two Towers.
Yes. I thought we already said that the equivalent of that was Galadriel taking out the sword jump on the orc.
Oh, that's
there.
True. Both. Yeah. Anytime an elf does something cool.
This is like when Legolas took down that gigantic elephant style thing. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. We don't need to keep relating it back to the original trilogy. Anyway, they bring out the warg, which is giving, I wrote in my notes, this is giving Hyena from the Lion King vibes.
Yeah. The wargs look very different from what we see in the trilogy. I wasn't too crazy about the CGI, I'll admit, but I was also very taken aback by the appearance of the warg. It scared the crap out of me when I first saw it. Like, the eyes for me just felt very like, that's very
nice warg impression, Dante.
Thank you.
And it's
straight up
like murders like at least two dudes, I think.
Yep.
In the episode. So it's pretty brutal. And it ends in complete failure. You know, he sees his friend get shot to death, Boromir style, I thought.
Yeah.
Right?
It was very reminiscent, I thought, of the Boromir scene where we just look up and we're like, he's escaped. Why is he standing there? Oh, and then he gets hit with another one, and I'm just like, "Oh, you did that on purpose, showrunners and directors! How dare you?"
Yeah, it's kind of like they're referring back visually and with some ideas to the trilogy, but not like explicitly. They're not like, "Remember when this happened to Boromir?" You know, they don't say anything like that.
But it's very much a visual cue that I think is a nice nod to it.
Yeah. But it is kind of this. I like this whole sequence because even though it didn't really move the plot along, it's this whole idea of, oh, they're struggling so hard against something and then still didn't work. Nothing happened. And that's a really effective idea that's conveyed by this plot line. So, and then they take him to their leader at the end.
Yeah. Mr. Blurry Man.
TBD, we'll
see.
That is.
We shall see.
TBD. Yeah. Final plot line, the Harfoots. They're walking through the forest. They're chanting, nobody goes off trail. Nobody walks alone. Which apparently is part of their culture.
Yeah, I thought it was just like one of those really cheesy lines from the first episode that like maybe Nori's stepmother didn't deliver great, but it's a mantra for them. And I thought that was kind of like a nice, the show keeps doing things that like the things that I wasn't crazy about, like the title sequence with the little black sand snaking through, bringing it back up as a different frame of reference that made me sort of appreciate it more.
Yeah. And not too much happens in the Harfoot plotline this episode, but I will say, I have to say, I found it almost comical, the entire Harfoot plotline, but not necessarily in the way that's intended, because the whole time it's like, is Nori's dad going to be able to join the caravan? And Harfoots are the sweetest characters in the show, as far as we can tell so far. They love life, and they're all, you know, they care about the kids and everyone being part of a community. And what is hilarious is, and now it's time to read from the book of all those people we left behind who died horrible deaths.
Yep.
And it's like, surely Jackson's the lottery almost. It's like, this like nice town. But by the way, sometimes we leave people behind and they die horribly.
Yeah.
And like, now let us pay tribute to them. And it's like, and it just so happens to be the very concern that Nori's dad has. Anyway, I thought it was unintentionally comedic, but what did you think of the fact that Harfoots do not suffer fools gladly? They will decaravan you, which by the way means almost certain death.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It was brutal to me. Like, I know that, like, that when they read from the book, some of them are like natural disasters. Like, I think I agree with you on most of the Harfoot stuff. One of the probably more heartbreaking or emotional parts was when we find out about Nori's friend Poppy and how she basically lost her whole family. And that was, to me, very, very sad instead of kind of comical in that moment. I think Megan Richardson did a great job in that scene with her facial expressions as Poppy. But, like, oh my God, the Harfoots are kind of brutal. And it was so jarring to like see that. I'm like, oh my God. No.
Is this in the books at all, Don? Is it mm-hmm. like hinted at all that they just leave people behind to die if they're not feeling well?
No, I don't.
This is like freaking Spartans in like 300 where they just like, they throw their unhealthy babies off of the cliff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Look, I got nothing for you other than like it was such a shock seeing that I just like I openly was like, oh no, I don't like
this,
that.
It's this bizarre incongruity of
yeah.
Oh, these are the most wholesome. Like if the people at Numenor were like, hey, we're leaving people behind, I'd be like, oh, that makes complete sense. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Harfoots are like, yep, sorry, you get left behind, you're dead. It's like. It just is so dark compared to everything else about that plot line that it's
yeah.
really, but I think the reason they did it is because they need to generate some kind of dramatic tension.
Right.
For the thing, but couldn't the dramatic tension just have been, it's going to be very inconvenient and uncomfortable and awkward for everyone. If like the dad is lagging behind, you know, did it have to be literally the whole family might die?
I have a sneaking suspicion that the reason they did this is to incorporate the stranger a little bit more in that, you know, he's going to help them pull the cart. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a little bit more there. I will wait and see whether or not this sort of like almost brutality comes back up again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it felt very disjointed compared to what we know about the Harfoots. It's like, oh, by the way, not everything is so hunky-dory and good to go.
The stranger emerges from hiding during this reading of the list of dead people and interferes with her. And, you know, the whole deception comes out, mm-hmm. which I thought was like, I was surprised that it came out this early. And it wasn't clear to me, like, are the rules that strangers are not allowed within the caravan and
that
the stranger helping them is going to be like on the down low, you know? It was kinda,
I don't know. The one thing I will say that they, I think, got really right is the Hobbits in the Third Age, like in the Peter Jackson trilogy, very xenophobic. They don't want humans who they refer to as the big people. They don't want them there, right? Leave them to their business. Bilbo, I think, does occasionally like have dwarves pop by in the books at the very least, just as like friends and visits. But for the most part, that's like very taboo, very like
don't so do they're that. Gonna be I guess the stranger helping them out, he's just gonna hang back and be in the weeds a little bit,
yeah,
and yeah. hopefully unseen. I will say, like, the design of all the hats and the caravan,
I love those.
Like with all the straw sticking out is like really cool, and like all the Harfoot design stuff is amazing. Like it just mm-hmm. it just really feels lived in. It really feels like these people kind of have integrated themselves into the forest in like a very meaningful way as to avoid detection.
Oh yeah.
And I think that stuff is really great. So anything else you want to say about the Harfoots, Don Marshall?
I'm maybe a little bit less curious about the Harfoot plot line now. And I think, again, it's just going to harken back to the who is the stranger, which, you know, was the same question we asked last time. But again,
has your opinion on who the stranger has changed since last time?
Didn't really get too much of a hint at any more details of who he might be. So no, I still am up in the air about him.
I will say that something. So in TV shows, the previously on, I don't know what your opinion is on previously on stuff, Don.
I kind of didn't want them to have one here, but
well,
I get why they did it.
The thing about previously on, I'm very ambivalent about previously on, because on the one hand, it's actually legitimately helpful. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I didn't remember that scene, or I didn't remember that moment of dialogue. On the other hand, previously ons can often telegraph what is going to happen in this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
A character from season one shows up on the previously on, and we're in season six. Like,
Didn't that happen in Game of Thrones when Joseph Mulway, Uncle Benjen came in?
All the time. Yes. All the time that kind of stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Very, very good. You know, Don, you're really good with the pulls this week.
That's because part of the reason I know that is because Adar is played by Joseph Mulway, who plays Uncle Benjen.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll see. So anyway, in this episode, the previously on. So anyway, I'm torn about previously ons. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think they're kind of spoilery.
Mm-hmm.
And before you even see the episode, one thing that happens in the previously on is you see the fireflies from last episode. Like, it shows how he manipulated the fireflies and the fireflies died.
Yes.
Like you see in this episode. And Poppy is very upset that they died. Right. And she brings it up again this episode. And Nori says, oh, it was an accident. Right. And I think we're meant to take Nori at her word that it was an accident. And so that therefore the stranger is a force for good and therefore is probably not the Balrog as he speculated last episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm less convinced he's the Balrog now, given that he's, you know, helping everybody. And look, if it turns out that everybody guessed that it was Gandalf from the beginning and they don't reveal it until like the end of season 5. Sure, let's have that happen. But you know what? I'm down for the ride. I'm down for the journey.
I think we'll know by the end of this season whether it's Gandalf or not. Is my
guess. Really hope so. I really hope so.
They're probably saving it for a season 7 or 8 reveal, is my guess. So, anyway, that is the episode. So a lot of big open questions, right? Specifically, what's going to happen with a stranger in the Harfoots? Is Arondir going to get out of the situation alive? Is Theo infecting his whole caravan with this evil stuff that's going around on this dagger? Is Galadriel going to break Halbrand out of jail and they're going to go back to the Southlands to defeat Sauron, right? That's, I think, the big question in hand.
Yeah.
So we will see how those play out on the next episode of The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, and this podcast, Decoding TV. Again, find more episodes at podcast.decodingtv.com and find us on YouTube. At youtube.com/decodingtv and also on TikTok, tiktok.com/@decodingtv. He is Don Marshall. I'm David Chen. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.